This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese. It's Tech Day on Talk of Iowa with Jeff Balvance, computer consultant from Iowa State University. Since we last talked with Jeff a month ago, security issues continue to plague us, including Facebook privacy concerns. There's some critical vulnerabilities challenging Adobe Photoshop. There's also been a discovery of a Mac version of an old Windows Trojan horse with fairly nasty behavior. On a brighter note, iPad sales have topped 2 million. But today there's reports of the gadget overheating with sun exposure. Maybe you shouldn't take it to the beach. And the FCC wants to know about our real internet speeds at home. We'll take your calls and emails this hour. Tech Day after news from National Public Radio and Iowa Public Radio. And this is Talk of Iowa for today. I'm Dennis Reese. It's Tech Day on the program. We'll talk about all issues concerning technology and computers with Jeff Balvance, computer consultant at Iowa State University. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, great. We have lots of things to talk about. We'd like to invite listeners to get in line and give us a call this hour with your questions about anything. Technology, computers, that is, mostly, 866-780-9100, or email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And, Jeff, you know, these security concerns never seem to go away, and every day it's something else. You sent me a couple of articles yesterday about Adobe Photoshop with some vulnerabilities found there, and now a Mac version of an old Windows Trojan horse, and the list goes on and on.
That's true. I like to tell people you're not really paranoid if they are really out to get you, and right. that's pretty much the truth. There are people out there who are very excited about getting a hold of your computer and using it for all kinds of evil purposes, or maybe just your personal information. That works too.
Thought never occurred to me to try to do that. I just I don't know.
Just says you're not evil.
So. Okay. Well, what's going on with Adobe Photoshop?
Well, there is a vulnerability in Adobe Photoshop that needs to be patched. If you've got the Adobe downloader set to check things automatically, it should be giving you a message that the one's available. Otherwise, the trick is just to open up Photoshop and go to the Help menu and choose Search for Updates. What's going on is the same kind of thing that often is used. If a properly constructed document is opened in Photoshop, it can lead to what's called a buffer overflow, and then you can put program code in where program code really shouldn't be, but get the computer to execute it. And sneaky people can use that to take over your computer. It's hard to imagine that you could do that with a Photoshop document, an innocuous picture, but it's possible to do so.
Is there one website that we can all go to that gives us a daily update of vulnerabilities and fixes and security threats?
There are some. The difficulty with them is that they tend to be, highly technical in nature. There are things like SANS. SANS.org is one that's used by industry professionals. But the vulnerability list is long, and you look through it, and figuring out what to do is very difficult. Probably the best thing to do is to, watch the sites for the applications that you use and the operating system. So make sure, keep an eye on Windows, keep an eye on whatever productivity tools you use, and especially anything that goes with the internet. So if there was a good place to do that, I wish I knew,
Would be nice. I've been using Windows 7 for a while and have not received very many Windows updates in the last couple of months. It was weird because at first I was getting sometimes, 10 or 12 critical updates, as they say, and I've maybe gotten one or two of those notices in the last month or so. I don't know what's going on with that.
Well, what happened was that you got Windows 7 fairly early in its lifetime, and you first release a product, you expect to see a lot of fixes and updates in the first few months. But Microsoft's actually done a pretty good job with Windows 7. I think there have been very few security problems with it so far, as compared to say Windows XP, which was basically awful.
Yeah, okay. And what about this Mac version of an old Windows Trojan horse? That must have taken some doing for these people to modify an old Windows Trojan horse for a Mac.
Well, I suspect they basically started from scratch, but they use the same idea. The idea is it's called the particular vulnerability, or the particular Trojan is referred to as Opinion Spy. And what it does, it comes with a number of screensavers and an audio format modifier that were posted to several major download sites. I mean, if you go to places like download.com or versiontracker.com, you don't usually expect to see malware there. They're usually pretty good about catching it. The trick is that the malicious software didn't get uploaded. It got installed when the screensavers were downloaded and installed. Those packages then did the downloads. So even the really good places sometimes slip up. What it does is it pops up this dialog box. It says Premier Opinion. And the whole business behind Opinion Spy is that they monitor your web traffic, all of the stuff that you do with your browser. They monitor it and they send information back to the company that, among other things, tells them where you're browsing and what you're doing and what you're buying. And the idea behind it, of course, that they upfront tell you about is that this will improve your shopping habits. Well, what they're really doing is they're taking your personal information and they're selling it. The other nasty thing about this particular program is that it has the ability to update itself, which means, and it's already been observed doing this once, which means it can come in and install whatever it wants. Once installed, it has root privileges in macOS, and then in macOS terms, that means basically root can do whatever it wants. And so it can install software, it can snoop around in your files, it can send spam out, whatever the people that are using it want it to do. And this is something that we've seen a lot on Windows. In fact, this is very, very similar to a program called Market Score that was put out about 4 years ago. In fact, was put out by what appears to be the very same people that are doing Opinion Spy. That basically everybody figured out what it was doing, and I know universities all over the country, including Iowa State, we simply blocked access to this program and to the servers that this program wants to use so that people wouldn't be spied upon like this.
So if you see Premier Opinions, that was it, right?
Premier Opinion is the thing that shows up at the top of the user license agreement that you have to click I accept in order to get it to install.
Okay. Run like crazy when you see.
Yeah, just close that up and go away. The bad reports is that at least some of the versions that people are starting to see of it don't have that dialogue and don't ask for any permission to install this. And they can get away with doing that because they're installing it as part of something that you already agreed to. There were a large a number of screensavers that were posted to all the download sites that came with this thing. And basically you should be a little bit nervous about anything from 7art-screensavers.com. These are the nasty people that are doing this.
Okay. 866-780-9100. Jeff Ballvan's computer consultant, Iowa State. Let's go to Dean in Dubuque. Good morning, Dean.
Good morning.
What's your question?
I Googled my name, and incorrect information came up on my name, which is disconcerting. I hate the fact that my privacy's gone through Google, but is there any way, I call Google, and of course I got an answering thing, and they said I had to do this and that. How do I correct the information on my name that's Googled?
Well, the big problem with talking to Google about this is that Google doesn't control the information.
All right.
Google does is it goes out and it looks at all the websites that it will let them look at it, and finds out that information from other people. So the trick is that if there's incorrect information, you have to go back to the source of that information and correct it there.
How do I find the source?
Well, the source is if you follow the page, that follow the link that Google gives you, it will take you to the original web pages, and that's the people that actually control the information. Unfortunately, that means that you have to follow a lot of links in order to get there.
Yeah, I think my son says some of that came out of the World Encyclopedia or something, but it's a newspaper article that's incorrect. So,
in that case, you would have to go back to the newspaper that originated it.
Oh, okay. Is there any way to get your name taken off of Google?
There is not, to my knowledge. I'll reserve that and say I'm not sure. But I think it would be very difficult.
Yeah, I don't want them to snoop around, and I don't want people putting my name up on a national bulletin board without my permission. I just feel that my privacy has been taken away from me by this Google thing, and I hate it.
Well, to defend them a little bit, I guess, it's not Google's fault. It's all of the other people that put your name up on web pages elsewhere. Admittedly, Google does give the people the access to it or help you find it. The other thing to bear in mind is that unless your name is pretty unique, the incorrect information may well be about somebody else.
Right. No, it's about me. My name is unique, and it's about me.
Okay, Dean,
right.
I appreciate your call
Thank
and your
you.
Concerns. And you said, Jeff, if it was a newspaper article that made the mistake, you can't blame Google for that, right?
That's right. Unfortunately, you have to go back to one of the thousands of websites that undoubtedly has that kind of information.
That's right. Let's go to Richard next in Hedrick. Good morning, Richard.
Hello. I was composing a post on a comment of a web page, and Thunderstorm knocked the power off when I rebooted my posting, which had become somewhat dear to myself, was gone. I had never uploaded it or anything. Mm-hmm. Is it possible to get that back?
Well, it kind of depends. The odds are probably against you. Were you composing this on a website, or were you composing it on one of the applications on your computer?
On a website. Like it was a Christian Science Monitor, mm-hmm. an article they had, and I was making a reply.
Sure.
And I have a Vista, and it restored everything when I rebooted it, but of course the comment wasn't there.
Yeah, since that comment was being generated on a website. In their application, the odds are pretty bad that you're going to have to start over.
We have to take a break.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call from Hedrick. Take a break. Technology Day continues in a minute on Iowa Public Radio. Talk of the Nation, or rather, Talk of Iowa continues on Iowa Public Radio. Talk of Iowa. Let's clarify that, Jeff. And we're talking to Jeff Ballvance this hour, technology consultant at Iowa State University. Our number is 866-780-9100. Any questions or comments? We'd like to hear from you this hour, or you can use electronic mail at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jeff, let's go to an email. This is from Jeff and Marion. Can you say if you know of, is it Fios, FIOS, Jeff?
Okay.
Or U-verse coming to Iowa anytime soon? Hope he's not talking about a rock band there.
I do not know of either of those sites, so no, I can't really comment. Sorry.
All right. Well, we fooled you. That's okay. Let's go
you
to...
You have prizes when you stump the band, you know?
Okay, let's go to Mike, who's calling from West Burlington. Good morning, Mike.
Hi. Recently, I'm picking up shortcuts that just pop up on my desktop with Chinese letters on them. I'm using a program called Trend Micro Internet Security Pro, and I'm having terrible luck communicating with these people because they're all from India, and I don't have the issue resolved. Do you have any suggestions on the desktop problem? And also, is there a company in America that does internet security that is American, that has Americans that you can visit with?
Well, that's a really good question. What I would recommend that you're doing, especially if you're using Trend Micro, is that you go to the website called housecall.trendmicro.com and use their house call launcher. That will give you another alternative for removing some of those things. What you're seeing is probably similar to the common fake antivirus programs. If you're getting pop-ups, you can sometimes kill those if they're happening during a session by going to the task manager, right-click on the taskbar and choose task manager and kill anything that says iExplore.exe. If it hasn't gotten very far on your computer, sometimes that'll take it out. Otherwise, I would probably recommend that you try the AVG Rescue CD. Just go to Google and search for AVG Rescue CD and you should find it. That seems to work pretty well for removing weird things that others don't deal with.
That's a free program. I think I used that a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they probably have a version you can buy that has more features. Would that be correct?
Right. Well, the Rescue CD is actually free for everybody to use out of the goodness of AVG's heart. As far as a company that's based here in the United States, I would say either McAfee or Symantec. Even McAfee, however, one of the big advantages of going worldwide is that you get 24/7 service. And many of the times the people I communicate with, I usually use email rather than to telephone. But what I'll get is someone from India. Some of the best security people seem to be in India.
If you can understand what they're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Okay, Mike, thanks for that call from West Burlington, 866-780-9100, Talk of Iowa. Jeff Bolvance, I had a security concern, and I called Symantec, and I got India, but they were excellent at taking care of the problem, and he just took control of my desktop and went through a bunch of stuff on his sat and watched him work. It's kind of fun. Solved the problem.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, really, when they can do that.
I know. Let's see. Let's go next to John, who's calling from Waterloo. John, you're on Talk of Iowa. John, are you there? Hello, John. Well, I hear some noise in the background, but I don't hear him. So let's try instead Josh in Des Moines. Hello, Josh.
Hello.
Yes, you're on Talk of Iowa.
Hi. I was just wondering, what do you think of the current technology climate for startup companies?
Oh, goodness. Well, anything is difficult right now. Getting capital is difficult. As far as the technology climate, there are a number of fields that you could probably get into. Anything involving mobile, computing, mobile phone, iPad development, Android development probably is good. I know of some people who are doing innovative web things. I think the big trick is find a niche, find some product that you can produce that nobody else can, and jump into it. Don't, you know, patenting is kind of silly. Just move as quickly as you can.
Okay.
I think, it's going to be challenging. Getting capital will be challenging. Do things as cheaply as you can at first.
So, one of the state's funds seems to focus on patenting. How do you feel their view on patenting is versus sort of the modern-day Web 2.0, just make it and run with it idea?
Well, software patents, I think, I have to qualify myself. I'm an open-source background person. So software patents, to me, there is a certain amount of evil to it. The fact that people are going in and patenting algorithms, I think, is not inherently a good thing. I think it stifles innovation to some extent. And in many cases, what you wind up doing is wasting a lot of resources defending patents. And it can't always be done anyway. If you're going to patent something, then you better do a really good search for prior art, because there undoubtedly is some.
Okay, Josh, anything else?
I think that's it. Yeah,
okay.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot for that call. Josh called from Des Moines. We appreciate the call. Let's go next to Jerry, who's in Cedar Falls. Hello, Jerry.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a pretty simple question, but I had a computer, and it had a printer with it. Now I have another computer, and they told me the printer would not work with the new one. I don't understand that. And if that is correct, what can I do with the old printer? It's like brand new. I just hate to put it in the dumpster. Do you have any suggestions?
Well, there are a couple of ways that printers can become obsolete. First of all, you may not have the connector on your computer. If it's an older printer, if it's an old printer that has a parallel port,
okay.
The parallel port has kind of fallen by the wayside,
and
you may not be having anything to connect to. Everybody's going to USB connectors for printers now.
Okay.
You may want to, you know, if it's a big printer and you've got a big investment and you're going to be looking at several hundred dollars.
It's not. It's just, you know, the new one, I think, costs less than $50, and I'm sure the old one, which is 10 years old, cost about that much, too. So
yeah,
I just hate to throw things away, but... if that's what it is.
Well, if it's a problem with using, you know, having a if it were an expensive printer, I'd say you might, if it was a parallel printer, you could look at a USB to parallel adapter, but those are going to cost in the neighborhood of $50. So only if you've got a big laser printer or something that you want to keep going does that really make sense.
No.
The other reason that things can become obsolete is that the manufacturer of the printer doesn't bother to make a driver to go with the new version of Windows, for example. Windows Vista, the Vista to, the XP to Vista transition, there were a lot of printers that fell because the manufacturer said, well, this is an old printer. We're not going to bother to make a new driver for it.
Yeah, I have Vista, so that's it. But do you have any suggestions of what I can do with the... old one, other than the dumpster?
Well, don't put it in the dumpster, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah, don't put it in the dumpster. What I would probably recommend that you look at doing is maybe donating it to a non-profit or a library or something. Possibly.
Best Buy has a nice recycling program going in Colombia.
That's the other approach. Many computer sales places like Best Buy do have recycling programs.
Do schools, are they able to use the... If I can't use it, a school probably can't either, right?
Maybe not. It'll depend on the place. It's worth asking.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. I'll try Best Buy.
Okay, thanks, Jerry, for the call from Cedar Falls. We have to take a break here in just a few seconds. John from Waterloo has called back, so we'll get to you, John, right after the break, which is about 5 minutes for the Environment Report. And we'll continue with Jeff Bolvance, computer consultant at Iowa State University. We would love to hear from you. We have another half hour left on the program following the Environment Report. 866-780-9100. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Talk of Iowa continues. I'm Dennis Reese. It's Technology Day on the program with Jeff Bolvance, computer consultant at Iowa State University. We had an email in during the break, and the gentleman wanted to point out that Goodwill Industry stores are very happy to accept any computer parts or computers, printers, anything to be recycled. There's no charge. Just drop them off at your local Goodwill. I knew that, and I have used that before. I'm glad he pointed that out. So, that is good to know. Let's go back. I want to mention one minor thing on ABC's technology page this morning, Jeff, a story about the iPad overheating in the sun. And I thought, oh, great, you take it to the beach, it gets hot, and then it shuts down. I suppose it's better, though, that it's shut down than burn up or something, right?
Well, yeah, there is a certain amount of safety factor to that. I could see the device becoming damaged fairly easily. Computer equipment, as a general rule, is sensitive to heat. Why do you have an iPad at the beach anyway?
Well, I don't know. They showed this person's on ABC TV technology feature this morning about he was sitting at the beach with the iPad. I thought that's kind of silly because I would never do that. I would think somebody might, you know, step on it or
chuck it into the sea.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, something to keep in mind. Let's go. John is called back from Waterloo. I hope we can get to him now. John, hello.
Hello. I upgraded my computer from ME to XP, and I added so that I had a couple gigs of memory. But it was a 1.4 clock speed back in 2001, and it seems to work still. I wonder if it's worth upgrading to Windows 7, and if what it would take to do that.
Well, going up to 7 is a bigger jump than going from ME to XP. If you're looking at a 1.4 gigahertz processor, that's going to be marginal for 7, I think. In that respect, I personally have bad feelings about upgrading operating systems. Upgrading Windows from one version to the other, oftentimes the power requirements of an operating system are kind of tailored to the power of the machine that it gets sold with. Yeah, you can do it. I think you can get away with it once. You probably can't get away with it twice. I think you'd be disappointed in the performance.
Can I ask you another question that's unrelated? Is there a way to so you're not drawing current all the time, to have it on one of those strips, power strips, and be able to turn it off without having to go through auto programming every time?
Now, that is one of the problems with most television sets. They are designed to keep that information there because the power is on. I don't know of right offhand of how many TV sets are available with the kind of flash ROMs that are used in a USB stick, for example. That would be a very logical thing to do for a TV set. But I don't know if there are any.
Okay. All righty. Well, thanks for your help.
Okay, thanks, John. 866-780-9100, the number to reach Jeff Bolvance, Talk of Iowa Technology Day. Paul is in Mason City. Hello, Paul. Paul, can you hear us?
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I have an older Dimension 2400 by Dell, and I'm getting a pop-up screen that says virtual memory too low, and it's starting to happen quite a bit, and the computer's running much slower now.
Okay. Well, the virtual memory is too low. That message is telling you that Windows is trying to use more of the swap space, the virtual memory space on your disk, than it has allocated to it. That virtual memory information is in the advanced part of the system properties. So if you right-click on my computer and choose properties, if I remember right, it's under advanced, and virtual memory is one of the choices. If you've set virtual memory to a particular size, you may need to make that number larger.
Okay.
The best thing to do is probably to let Windows manage it. That's one of the options. Just tell Windows, you know, go ahead and make it as big as you want. The other problem you may be running into is that you may be running out of hard disk space, and so it's trying to manage the space, and it's got no place to go.
Okay. What upgrading? I think it's like 512 megabyte stick that's in it now. If I put, I can go up to 2 gigabytes. Would that help?
Actually, that's going to make the virtual memory problem worse. If you just keep, because you need, as a rule of thumb, you need twice as much virtual memory space on your hard drive as you have real memory.
Okay.
That's a rule of thumb. But if you go from 5 megabytes to 2 gig, that means you'll need to go from at least a gigabyte to at least 4 gigabytes. You know.
Wow. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, Paul, for that call from Des Moines. Here's an email from Tyler in Des Moines. I would love to hear a definite answer on Mac or PC. Now, that's a really tough question. I make videos as a hobby, but have found with good software on a PC, I haven't had any issues. I've heard you can spend the same amount of money on a PC as you would on a Mac, but end up getting more for your money. What do you think?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I don't think you can make a definitive answer on that. That's a correct observation. You can probably get more computer hardware for the money if you go with a Windows-style machine rather than buying something from Apple. You will get a better user interface, a better user experience probably in the Mac OS environment. Unless you're the kind of person who likes to tinker, in which case Windows is probably better. It all depends on what you're most comfortable with. And I don't think you can make that definitive answer. It's more to say there are better choices for different situations. If you want a computer that will require very little maintenance, that you don't have to go in and make absolutely sure that you've got all the updates. If you want it to take care of itself, then you're probably looking at a Macintosh. But that experience will, number one, it will limit some of the software that you can run because it's stuff that won't be available for Windows. And number two, it means that will cost you more money. Windows will get you a less expensive machine, but... And you will have more software available, but you will have the security profile. You'll have the increased security risks, partly because Windows is a little less secure and partly because there are simply more people targeting Windows than are targeting Mac OS. And I'm not sure you can come down to say which one is better without knowing a lot more about what you want to do.
I wonder what Steve Jobs would answer that question.
Well, Jobs would have two interesting answers. One, of course, is that Apple is superior. The other statement that he would have that he made yesterday is that he is coming to the conclusion that not everyone needs a desktop computer.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe one in some number of people really need to have a desktop, and the rest of the people will be satisfied with mobile devices in the future.
Mm. Seems to be the way things are going. Here's an email from Mike. I would recommend that people check avcomparatives.org to get some hard facts when trying to decide on what antivirus to purchase. Also, for removing most malware, there is a site called malwarebytes.org.
Two good recommendations. AV Comparatives is a company in Europe, I believe in Germany, that does, you know, what I would hope would be free and unbiased comparisons of antivirus packages, and they publish those reviews. And unlike some of the places, there's a magazine called Virus Bulletin that publishes similar things, but they charge you for them. AV Comparatives lets you have them for free. They do appear to be pretty unbiased, and they do have good comparison information there. I'd recommend that. And yeah, for removing malware, one of the tools that we use all the time is Malwarebytes, any malware, and it's a good product. Malwarebytes.org.
Okay, some great ideas. Appreciate that. Let's go to Charlotte, who is calling us from Charles City. Good morning, Charlotte.
Good morning. My question is, my husband's a amateur photographer, and we want to invest in a computer so that we can keep his photographs on there, also maybe a good printer so we can print out different sizes, and maybe add a program, you know, that he could maybe do some augmenting of the photography.
Sure.
Do you have any recommendations of what we would need, what would be maybe the best printers, what we'd need for storage space, that type of thing, or a particular computer that might be better than another?
Well, I can give you a couple general recommendations. One is I feel that laser printers do a better job of printing photographs than do inkjets. Inkjets are horrendously expensive to run, so I think a laser printer does a better job. Having said that, I'll say that some laser printers do better than others. So when you purchase something, don't order it off the net. Go to a store and actually look at, ask for photo printouts from them.
Okay.
For comparison. If you do look at an inkjet, Kodak's printing seems to be about half the price of everyone else's. Their printers are a little more expensive, but I think you pay for it, you make up for it in the long run.
Okay.
Okay. Other questions? Tools for manipulating photos. The industry standard is Adobe Photoshop. Having said that, that's an expensive one. Mm-hmm. And a free alternative is something called the Graphic Image Manipulation Program, GIMP. That's available for all platforms. It's a little bit different to work with, so it'll be harder to find somebody to teach you how to use it. But we use it at our house and business, and it does a really good job.
Okay.
And doesn't cost anything. As far as the computer that it runs on, just about anything would work. If you're going to be doing photographs, you will need a lot of disk space. Unfortunately, disk space is really cheap.
Oh, okay. Any recommendation on how much memory we should start with in a computer? I mean, you're talking downloading the photos onto disks.
Yeah, if you're going to be putting down pictures on disks, you'll want as much disk space as you can get, and you'll want, because you have these big picture files and lots of them, you'll probably want an external hard drive to do backups to.
Okay.
There really isn't a good way to back up a big hard disk other than another big hard disk.
Oh, okay.
Optical drives, you know, we used to say, oh, you can just write things off to DVDs. They're huge. Compared to modern hard disks, DVDs are tiny, and that's hard to imagine.
Oh, is that right?
Right. Okay.
Okay. That's
You're looking at a 1 terabyte hard disk, which is not, you know, if I was doing photo editing on a desktop machine, I was really, really serious about it, I'd probably look at terabyte size hard drives, and that will take you 200 or 300 DVDs to back up.
Wow.
Yeah, that is amazing, isn't it? Let's go with a terabyte instead. All right,
yeah,
Charlotte.
That's right. All right, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Todd is next in the line, and Todd is calling from Northwest Iowa. Hello, Todd.
Hey, good morning. I bought a laptop about this time last year and a printer. The laptop came with a, you know, free upgrade to Windows 7, so did that. Now to get my wireless connection between laptop and printer, you know, I've been trying to do an easy download of a driver and just keeps coming up not available at this time. You know, I've been told that maybe that's just a thing that I have to wait out and eventually I can download it or go and buy that on a CD. Do you have any comments?
Well, it is certainly possible. 7 has been out for a little while. I assume you've contacted the manufacturer to find out what kind of timeline they have on releasing a driver for Windows 7.
Yes.
Okay. Unfortunately, with printers, that's kind of the disadvantage. You're kind of at the mercy of the manufacturer as to when drivers are released. I assume you're using Windows 7. Was the upgrade from Vista?
Yes. Okay. Went through where I purchased it, and you know, I've been on tech support with the computer, the you know, with Dell, HP, Best Buy, and you know, kind of get different answers. So I guess I'll continue to wait.
Yeah, that may be the only solution. And what I would really like recommend is, if you've got something like that, see if you can get some kind of a timeline out of the printer manufacturer. You know, is this something that's going to be 3 months, 5 months, you know, a year before that driver's released? It may be that they have a driver in beta and it'll be, you know, next month. But
thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Todd, for the call. We have a couple of lines open now, 866-780-9100. Jeff Ballvance is a computer consultant at Iowa State University. He's in our Iowa Public Radio studio in Ames. Judy has an email from Cedar Rapids. I've got a Mac PowerBook G4 I need to update, but I've read several bad reviews on Office for Mac 2008. Should I buy the Apple product, iWork, instead? And will iWork enable me to seamlessly use all of the PC Office applications I encounter on the web as well as on my PC?
Well, iWork will let you do that. But there, you know, any time that you look at a translation from Microsoft to another product, you may see fidelity changes, you might say, things that won't translate quite correctly. Having said that, you have the same kind of problems from one version of Microsoft Office to another. You even see that between the Windows and the Macintosh versions. One big advantage with going to Office 2008 on a Macintosh is that 2008 uses the same file formats that Office 2007 and 2010 for Windows use. So there's no file translation problem anymore. So that would be an advantage to going with Microsoft Office.
Okay, here's another email in from Laura. I have no trouble downloading library books in my MP3, but they won't load into my new WMA player. It says something about licensure. All answers on websites such as ask.com are way too complicated to follow. Is there a simple way? I have firewall security.
Well, I think the problem that you're seeing is not so much that you can't download the MP3s to the player. It's just that the player won't play them afterwards. If what you have is really a WMA player, WMA stands for Windows Media Audio, and that can include a thing called digital rights management, where you can say, okay, I can only play this on certain types of device. I'd have to know more about the player to know whether or not it can be told to do MP3s. There are some tools available that can convert MP3s into WMA, can change the format of an audio. If there is digital rights management, if there's DRM on it, it may not translate, and it may not be possible to use that. Check with the library and see if you can download those books in WMA format rather than MP3.
All right, let's go next to John in the Quad Cities. John, you're on Talk of Iowa.
Oh.
Hello, John.
I've been wondering about these viruses. They do so much damage. What languages are these viral programs? Are they written in every language out there?
For the most part, yeah, I'd say they are for the most part written in the common languages that are used for development. They're probably written in C++ or C#. If for Windows, they're probably, some of them are, hardly anybody writes an assembler. There may be some in Visual Basic. It's certainly possible to do that kind of thing. Many of the download systems that are being used are written in things like JavaScript.
Because I'm wondering, The language that you are using, that language has to actually recognize and understand the language of the virus in order for the damage even to be done.
Well, yeah, the virus has to be tailored to the operating system that you're
otherwise
running.
The two wouldn't talk to each other.
Exactly.
Okay, I've been wondering that for a while. Okay,
and that's,
thank you.
That's why the security by obscurity approach works a little bit. If you use Mac OS X or use Linux, you do have a little bit of an advantage because you have to tailor the application to that operating system, and many of the viruses on the in the world are tailored for Windows.
Oh, okay.
Okay, well, that was an interesting question, I thought. John, thank you for the call. Let's go next to Al, who is in Ames. Hi, Al.
Good morning. I have a PC with Windows XP and a wireless router. Sometimes when I shut down, I get a message that says someone else is using your computer. If you shut down, they may lose their data. Can you tell me the likely source of this intrusion?
Well, one possibility, do you have more than one user installed on your machine? In other words, is there more than one person that uses it, and do you have to log out and log back in when you do so?
I'm the only user.
You're the only user. Okay. Well, the other possibility then is that there is an application that is running as perhaps a system-level priority. Sometimes a virus or other malicious package can run as another user, would run as administrator. It's possible that somebody else is logged in, but it's kind of unlikely. Do you have a DSL modem or a cable modem?
Cable.
Okay. You're connecting through wireless or wired?
Wireless.
It is possible that someone is close enough to you to make a connection. Generally, a wireless device, an access point, will act as a router, which will act as a network address translation router, which basically doesn't let the outside world see your machine. Now, okay. if there is someone close enough that they can see your machine directly through the wireless, it's possible they could be doing something there. But it's kind of unlikely unless you're in a very, an apartment building, someplace fairly cramped.
Okay.
My guess is probably that there is some application that's running as administrator or running as the system user or the network user that's built into Windows that's not shutting down properly.
Okay, yeah, I do have some of that, so I bet that's probably it.
Thank you very much. Let's try to get one more very quick question. If you have a quick question, Robert?
Yeah, Connell? Hi, how are you?
Good. Can you make it quick?
Is there a website to listen to a free audiobook?
A free audiobook?
Yeah, like a free audiobook with a book.
I'm not sure I can give you a recommendation on that. I don't know.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, but thanks for the call anyway. We appreciate it. And Jeff Ballvance, thanks so very much. You're just full of useful information as every time you're on the program.
Thanks.
We'll have you. We'll talk to you again in just about 4 weeks.
Okay.
Talk of Iowa today. Our production assistant is Rosalind Sixby. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Dennis Reese. Stay tuned next for Fresh Air, The Exchange at 12 noon from Iowa Public Radio News. Thanks for listening.